This is a Federal News Network podcast.
Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars sponsored by WEPA. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Good morning and welcome to For Your Benefit. It's June 8th, 2020. Today's show is taxes, taxes, and taxes. And who better to do that than Dave DeJong, attorney at law, Steve Wittes, attorney at law, both partners at the firm Stein, Sperling, Bennett, DeJong, Driscoll. I've known these two fellows for a long time, and it's always a pleasure to have them on, have them provide both the detail into the law and the insight in understandable language. So, guys, how's every little thing this morning?
Good, Bob. A pleasure to be here. This is our first virtual appearance after being in the studios a couple of handfuls of time.
Well, appreciate being with you again, Bob.
Yeah, it's good, and the connection sounds good. So let's start off. There were 10 questions that you all gave me, and I really like the first one to start off. This is a good general, but we can dig into it. So this tax law that passed in December last year, it was called the Secure Act, and it overhauled a number of rules on retirement plans. So if somebody was to say, pick the single most significant change, now there were an awful lot of changes, so what do you think? What would you say?
Well, Bob and Dave, from my perspective, I think the new rule on minimum distributions is probably the single biggest change. Effective January 1, the old rule in which payments to non-spouses, for example, from a thrift savings plan upon someone's death, could have been paid out over the lifetime of the child or friend, as the case may be. For example, if somebody was 33 years old, the payments could have been spread out over 50 years. And since the receipt of retirement plan money is subject to ordinary income, even if there were, you know, just stocks in there, it's pretty dramatic and pretty high taxed. But effective January 1, with only a few exceptions, the distributions must be made out within 10 years. The 10-year rule can be done in any manner. And for example, it could all come out at the end of the 10th year. It doesn't have to be pro rata, but it's a huge change. And that effectively, the projections according to the fiscal arrangements are that it will raise about $16 billion over the next 10 years. It's going to make a major change in someone's estate plan and especially their retirement planning.
So with that tax, when it comes out of a retirement plan, I would say the vast majority of the folks, when you say retirement plan, they think of their TSP. In the outside world, outside the government, it's a 401k plan. So monies, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, guys, are deductible when they come out of the paycheck, and the money then that goes into the account, thrift savings account, continues to grow, and there would be no tax until that money is withdrawn. Am I right with that?
That's right. And I'm surprised how many people, Bob, saying it's that a retirement plan is tax-free. It's tax deferred. Pretty soon you're going to have to pay Uncle Sam one way or the other. And generally, these new rules are pretty heavy because many times people assume that if they're going to go into trust long-term for children or another beneficiary, they can just be taken out over a long time. And they used to call that either the stretch IRA or the IRA legacy, meaning literally a legacy over someone's lifetime. But now that it's got to be paid out over 10 years, the tax hit is a whole lot more dramatic. And this would include IRAs as well, as you noted, 401ks, TSPs, IRAs, not necessarily Roth IRAs, of course, but any kind of tax-deferred arrangement that's in a qualified plan would be involved.
All right.
The reason behind this is very interesting, that a retirement plan – an IRA was considered a retirement benefit for the account holder, so that when it was inherited and went into the hands of children or grandchildren, it was considered to not necessarily be for retirement. Practical side of it, it was a way of raising money, but it is an irony that it was part of the Secure Act, because it will make some children and grandchildren feel more insecure.
And Dave, I want to add something to that, which is that, well, generally, I think it's for the participant, and the participant's spouse is a theory. There was an earlier case called the Rahmacher, and for what matter it involved, which was asset protection, isn't totally relevant here. But the message was, in the theory by the federal government, as I understand it, and to expand what Dave noted, is that they're really saying when a retirement plan was protected in so many ways, whether it's asset protection or longer-term payouts for a participant and the participant's spouse, but when it comes to someone else, a child, a grandchild, a sibling, a friend, whatever, they no longer feel that protection is really there, because the goals and the needs of the participant and the spouse are no longer as protected. Again, whether it's asset protection or a longer term payout for taxes to avoid minimize taxes.
Well, you've created a email question already, and it's spot on with what you all are talking about now. So it says, please ask your guest today about how best to structure estate plans under the Secure Act with regards to stretch IRAs being limited to 10 years for many types of non-spouse beneficiaries. Oof. But I mean, this was right after what you guys kind of mentioned this already.
Well, right. And I don't think we planted that question, but thank you for the person that sent it in. I do want to step back and quickly mention the five exceptions to the general 10-year rule, which is basically if it goes to and again, there's various conditions and issues involved with each, but if generally the distributions are to a surviving spouse, that's outside the 10-year rule, to minor children until they become the age of majority, third disabled, fourth chronically ill, and those who are not more than 10 years younger, which ironically may involve what the individuals asked. One of the planning is the reverse. Many years ago, or until years ago, like last year, the thinking was you'd always give it to somebody much younger, so they had a much longer payout. Now, if you're thinking about, let's say, leaving money to a sibling who is 5, 8 years younger, but not more than 10 years younger, they actually could get the long-term stretch IRA because you could use their life expectancy. Number two, many people are considering Roth IRAs because, it's a little bit the reverse of what you said, Bob. You do have to pay a lot of taxes when you're going to convert or when you originally set up the Roth IRA. But at least then, once it's paid out, you can wait 10 or 11 years, as the case may be, if somebody died early in the year, to pay it out. But the other issue that we should talk a little bit about further, because I know Dave wanted to cover several other questions here, is that many people are leaving long-term trust for their children, sometimes for asset protection. For example, they want to make sure it's preserved for their child in the event of a marital split up. So they put it into a lifetime trust for the child. The problem is trusts tend to be taxed at a little higher rate. So you can hold the money in longer and control it and protect it. But the price, the lottery ticket for doing this is it seems to be a little bit of a higher tax because you're subjected to the trust rates, which generally tend to be at the highest rates at a very low bracket level. So for the individual that asked, one is to think about doing a Roth IRA. Number two is trying to leave it maybe to a spouse or a younger or somebody closer in age. Or if you want to use an asset protection one, again, remember the taxes may be a little bit higher. The fourth one that's often mentioned, and many of the insurance folks are saying this, of course, and charities, is if you leave it right to charity on death, or if you buy an insurance product, that also can be helpful.
One of the interesting ironies, Steve, is in larger families where the children are spread out over a 10-year period. I've got a number of clients who are getting older and never had children. So their siblings are their potential beneficiaries. And if they are one of the older kids and they have a brother or sister 8 or 9 years younger and another one a dozen years younger, one sibling can get the benefit of payments over his or her lifetime, and the other one will be stuck with the 10-year rule.
That's right, Dave. And actually, as I'm thinking about it, you mentioned the other day we were talking about one of your clients that had a very large family, lots of children, lots of grandchildren. And while normally, you know, be thinking of, okay, we'll just leave it to the kids, we ended up thinking that let's spread it so that we could do it to many beneficiaries in that large family, that one of your many clients, that we ended up setting it up so that we designated numerous beneficiaries so each could make their his or her own individual choice, too, about how to accelerate it or not accelerate it within the 10-year period. But at least we were able to separate it out in different ways and got some different options that way.
All right. I understand that they put this provision into the law, but then didn't they move the age back from 70 and a half to, I believe, 72 when somebody was required to start taking a minimum distribution? So the two-year spread doesn't appear to be that great relative to the 10-year effectively cliff to take all the money out. So
no, I agree, Bob. The onerousness of getting rid of the stretch IRA or stretch retirement plan, that disadvantage far outweighs the advantage of an extra year or two for being able to avoid minimum distributions. If you had not had to commence distributions, if you hadn't turned 70 and a half by December 31 of last year, the new age where you must commence minimum distributions is age 72. So some people will get an extra year, others will get 2 years depending on the timing of their birthday. And another key point is that grace period for the very first year, if someone turns age 72, let's say, in 2023, I'm going to use that year to get past the transition period. Just like under the old rule, you have until April 1 of the following year to commence distributions. You have to do a second one, though, by December 31 of the same calendar year, because the one in which you get a three-month deferral is really a grace period for taking your initial distribution for that first year. And another point is, if you are still working and you do not own 5% or more of the business for which you are working, you do not need to commence taking from your employer retirement plan until you cease employment. So that will give you not only a year or two, but perhaps a number of years if you plan on working deep into your 70s. It doesn't apply to IRAs. It only applies to funds in that employer retirement plan, but there is the possibility of moving over other retirement funds into that employer plan.
So, Dave, if somebody's 75 years old and got a very large TSP plan and doesn't want to start withdrawing, it seems to me that they could be protected and defer that also because they haven't stopped working, and presumably they don't own 5% of the country.
That is correct.
All right. Andrew tells us it's time to take a short break, and the sponsor of the show, WEPA, and what they can do for the listeners.
You have life insurance to protect the people you love. As a civilian federal employee, you have two choices designed specifically for you, WEPA and Fegley. The big difference? Price. Chances are WEPA premiums will cost you less. In fact, the average WEPA member saves $375 per year on premiums. Prioritize your peace of mind with a life insurance policy designed for feds by feds. If you're a civilian federal employee interested in comparing WEPA to Fegley, visit waepa.org today. WEPA is a proud sponsor of 4-Year Benefit, presented by NITP, Mondays 10:05 to 11 a.m. on Federal News Network, 1500 a.m. WEPA has been insuring the future of federal workers for more than 75 years. See why over 46,000 feds have already switched to WEPA at waepa.org.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're here talking with Dave DeJong as well as Steve Wittes, and both are attorneys at law with the firm Stein, Sperling, Bennett, DeJong, and Driscoll in Rockville. And we had some really good comments, and let me ask you, this probably, Dave is already shaking his head, no, you can't do that. But if you were able to move money from, say, an IRA into the TSP, and hide out in there maybe for a while, and then could it come back out and go back into the IRA?
I think you can. I have not had a client do that. And if I have someone who's interested, it would have to be something that I would check to be sure that you could move money that otherwise would have to be taken into your current employer plan. Haven't had anybody suggest it yet.
Well,
I believe the way it would work is that it could be done, but if the IRA, I think, had to derive primarily from a previous employer, so it'd be called an IRA rollover. If it was, because then presumably it could be protected, I believe it could be put into a TSP. If it was simply an IRA that had started out as an IRA, then I don't think you can. That's a traditional IRA. It wouldn't have been a rollover. I think it needed to have been derived from one's profession or business, as the case may be.
Okay, so we hit pretty hard the 10-year stretch, the 10-year rule on distributions. We talked about you could delay it under the classic 70 and a half. In this case, you could delay distributions to 72. But what other major changes were beneficial to individuals?
Well, there were a couple in the SECURE Act. One of particular note benefits part-time employees. Generally, a worker does not come into a 401k or any other employer plan until they have hit 1 year of service and are age 21. Now, 1 year of service is typically defined as 1,000 hours, but we know that a lot of people work one or more part-time jobs and they're not working the 18 to 20 hours per week that's needed to hit 1,000 hours over the year. So we have a new rule. It's not effective in 2020. It'll be effective next year in 2021, that a 401k plan must permit elective deferrals once an individual has worked 500 hours for the business in three consecutive years. On the next entry date, presumably January 1, then they have the right to do elective deferrals. What is particularly interesting is the fact that the employer will not need to make any contributions, even if there is some sort of a match. It doesn't affect the employer other than the employer has to give the worker an opportunity to have the ability to do some elective deferrals on their part-time income.
Okay, let me ask you a tangent question here. With the folks that we deal with, you know, about every agency you can think of and in different disciplines, they might be scientists and they might be statisticians, they could be at the IRS, et cetera. But they have this entrepreneurial spirit. I won't say it's with 100% of the people, but I'm always surprised at the number. They have special skills that they can turn into a profitable business as a consultant or whatever skill set they might get. So here's where I'm going with this. Are there any other major changes beneficial to business, in this case, small business?
Perhaps most beneficial to small business is that there is the ability beginning for 2020 plan years to create the plan after the end of the year up to the extended due date of the tax return and then do a contribution by that date for the preceding year. Historically, the only type of retirement plan for an employer that could be created after year end was a simplified employee pension plan or a SEP that could historically be created to the extended due date of the return, typically in the case of a calendar year, September 15 or October 15, but no other plan. Now, for 2020 plan years, meaning generally in early 21, if somebody looks at their profit picture for the year and says, wow, I made all of that, what can I do now that it's March? And what they can do is create any sort of retirement plan and fund it by the due date. Now, the due date is typically March 15 for a flow-through entity or April 15th for a sole proprietor or single owner LLC, as well as a regular or C corporation. But that return can easily be put on an automatic extension, and again, depending on the type of entity, you can decide what you want to do and fund it all the way into September 15 or October 15.
Wow, that's friendly. And thus far, we've talked about friendly changes. Not that I'm negative, but invariably somebody's going to say, well, Is this a panacea for everything, or are there certain things that I should be aware of that maybe could be considered unfair to a taxpayer?
Well, penalties are always something that confounds taxpayers and also annoys them. Most individuals and businesses feel they're heavily taxed. And if they make a mistake, even an inadvertent one, they're hit with significant penalties. There is a general requirement of filing a 5500 series form. Small plans that do not have large balances where there is just a single owner are initially exempt, but most plans have to file a Form 5500. It's typically due July 31 if your calendar year, but it can be extended. And the penalties were like $25 a day, and they have been increased by tenfold. The penalty for failure to file is like $250 a day, up to a maximum of $150,000. Now, in general, IRS has not been good at abating penalties, but in the retirement plan area, there's been so much confusion, and IRS has been pretty liberal. Hopefully, they will continue.
Okay, this is good information because the listeners sometimes have a small business on the side while working, or they go into it, or for the married ones, they might have a spouse. So these same rules are pretty much the same for a non-federal spouse. And, penalties. Penalties just sound rough, and you made them sound even rougher because they are. The CARES Act, which is the Secure Act, the CARES Act also impacted the minimum distribution rules. Now, we talked a little bit about age 70 or 72, but correct me if I'm wrong, the minimum distribution rule says you've got to start to take something out at such and such a date, and again, new provision at age 72 going forward. What was the change to the minimum distribution, though? I read something that there was a change to that as well.
Bob, it was changed, and it's pretty significant. For 2020, there is no minimum distribution. And let me give you a little background of the impact there, because whether one calls it the required minimum distribution or the minimum required distribution, for example, somebody who is 70 and a half, which is about to be changed, but under the current law, and by the way, the tables will change a little bit in 2021, so it gets a little more interesting, but at least if the traditional somebody turns 70 and a half last year, they had to take out just under 4% of their distribution based on a life expectancy plus 10 years of 27 years. But if that person, and they're probably thinking, okay, so I'll pay the amount on that, I don't have to take out much. But what's a really nasty penalty in every way, whether it's on to the beneficiary, whether it's the participant, is the penalty for a shortfall in the distribution of that MRD, RMD. We're in Washington, so we got to have initials everywhere, but is a 50% penalty. It's a pretty nasty one. So if people think, well, I'll just not worry about it. So the fact they don't have to take it out this year gives them a little bit of chance to defer it. Obviously, people seem to need more this year, but if it's a way, at least the CARES Act gave us a little bit of a reprieve that didn't force it to come out and maybe minimize a little bit of taxes in 2020.
And there are some people who were forced to receive distributions within a five-year period. If they were beneficiaries of individuals who had died before reaching the old 70 and a half required beginning date, and they were not considered designated beneficiaries, perhaps because it was payable to the estate, they had to get everything out of that retirement plan or IRA within 5 years of the December 31 following death. If anyone is in that situation, they are being granted an additional year as a result.
Let me just add one more thing, Dave. As you've noted, since Dave noted the five-year rule, which is often the default rule, especially if it's to an estate for the retirement plans and then out to the beneficiaries, there are effectively three different sets of rules. Is it a five-year rule? Is it the 10-year that we talked about? Can either be taken out ratably or wait to the end of the 10th year. And as I noted, it could even be close to 11 years if the decedent died early in the year. But then there's all those exceptions, those people that are sort of the people that have the surviving spouse and so on. So there's really three sets of rules, and it gets a little complicated, though.
Okay. I'm taking notes, and I kind of know you, and I occasionally call you up and ask questions. But somebody listening, this is really good information that I would say not everybody's going to use, because not everybody has a small business, but the ones that do probably have enough confusion with the change in the law. But is there a way to access you all?
Yes, we can be reached at 301-340-2020, or you can go to our website and get either Steve's or my email address. The website is www.steinsperling.com, and we all are continuing to work through this pandemic.
And you, besides providing great tax counsel, Dave and I worked together many years ago, and we worked for this really tough but fair tax whiz kid. And I always felt if I was in a fight, I wanted to be in with him because I knew we'd win. Over the years, he was still there, but unfortunately passed. And now if somebody asks, I said, if I'm ever in a fight, I want Dave DeJong in the alley with me. So Dave's not a tough, nasty guy, but he's just a really smart tax guy that generally is better prep for any meeting that you might have than the other side of the table. So let's go off to the next one. The Paycheck Protection Program, correct me if I'm wrong, this is where if somebody had a small business, they could apply for a let's call it a rebate. There was nothing really, didn't have that much to do with like an IRA or a SEP or a retirement plan, but it would be cash and it otherwise wouldn't be taxed if used in the business. So I think that was called a Paycheck Protection Program. And so these special loans and distributions, are there any exceptions made to the victims of the pandemic with regards to payback of this or application for this?
Bob, there were several provisions in this legislation called the CARES Act that affect retirement plans. Probably the best known provision, of course, was the provision that gave rebate checks out or did it by direct deposit. And of course, most middle income and lower income people have already received a so-called rebate, which was really an advance payment, a credit against their 2020 tax liability. And the second most known part of the CARES Act was that so-called PPP loans, where businesses were able to apply through their bank for loans that may or may not be forgiven. That period will be commencing in the next 2 weeks for many loan recipients. But there were provisions in the CARES Act affecting retirement plans. The loan provisions and the early withdrawal provisions. And to take advantage of either of those, you either had to have been diagnosed with the virus or had a spouse who was diagnosed or a dependent who was diagnosed. If you had no family member, fortunately, who was hit by the virus, then you will still be eligible for this enhanced treatment if you had an inability to work due to your quarantine or furlough or the company closing, or you had reduced hours. You just need to be able to show that you were impacted by the virus. If you can, you may, until December 31 of 2020, withdraw up to $100,000 from your plan or IRA and spread the taxation over 3 years, 2020 through 2022. And if it turns out that you don't need the money, or you are restored to some degree of financial health, you can re-contribute it through the end of 2022 and not have to pay taxes. And again, this is available to everyone, but in particular, if you are under age 59 and a half, if you don't pay it back, you will not be hit with the early withdrawal penalty up to $100,000. There's also an enhanced ability to borrow against your plan. The statutory limit is traditionally you can borrow up to one half of your vested interest, or $50,000, and until September 22 of this year, another 3.5 months, you can borrow up to $100,000 or 100% of your vested balance. And it appears as if you have to take into account any prior loans that are still outstanding in determining the limitation. And lastly, if you have an outstanding loan, you've been repaying it over no more than 5 years. That's the law. All loan payments are suspended for the rest of 2020. So in essence, you get an extra year before the repayment in full will be mandated.
Wow, I'm taking notes. I need a break. Thanks, Dave. And I think it is time for a break, and we'll listen to what NITP can do for the listeners.
Who do you trust when making your most important decisions? National Institute of Transition Planning has been the trusted source for federal retirement planning, serving new, mid-career, and pre-retirement federal employees for more than 30 years. NITP's subject matter experts bring more than 800 years of collective expertise on federal benefits, financial transition, and estate planning. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com to sign up for their free monthly newsletter and information about free webinars.
Does planning for retirement seem like a daunting task? Is retirement years away? It will arrive sooner than you think. Prepare now to stay on track. Join the thousands of federal employees and retirees who have already attended National Institute of Transition Planning's free monthly webinars to learn more about retirement and financial planning. NITP is the national leader and trusted source for federal retirement information. Visit NITPinc.com to sign up for NITP's free monthly newsletter and webinar.
Welcome back to For Your Benefit. We're then closing 10, 12 minutes, and we're talking with two tax attorneys, Dave DeJong, Steve Wittes, and they're with the firm Stein, Sperling, Bennett, DeJong, and there are a couple more there. But I'm listening to you, and to be fair, you gave me like 10 questions, but I really like this question right now towards the three-quarter mark with the show. What's new in the retirement and estate planning for the middle-income people?
Bob, I think this is one of the key questions because it's emphasized something that we're finding a lot in our practice. Some of the, forgetting taxes for a moment, there's the practical piece. You know, that so many people are worried about taxes, they're worried about maybe asset protection. But when I think of, when I see how large the TSPs have grown, and especially as the market is hopefully going to continue to come back, that many people come to us and will say, have you taken care of your beneficiary designations for your plans? Many people assume that their wills take care of it, and they don't. That for both life insurance and retirement plans, it's dependent on the beneficiary designation forms you sign. Doesn't matter what your will says. And I'm surprised that when the next follow-up question is, well, okay, you said you've named, for example, your spouse is the primary beneficiary, and said, who is your contingent beneficiary if your spouse does not survive? The contingent is often not filled out. We are begging people. It actually gives me heartburn to think that people would not fill that out, because many retirement plans, the contingent beneficiary is the estate. And as Dave noted, that is in a way the worst that can happen, because it's going to accelerate the distribution, often into 5 years. So number one, we're trying to encourage people to make sure their beneficiary designations are lined up and up to date. Number two is a bigger one that, and I'll go back to this first issue that we've talked about today, which is that the acceleration of how fast the distributions must come out makes that decision for many clients who said, well, I've got a 21 or 25 or 30-year-old child. Even if I leave the retirement plan to them, it's so little that comes out each year. What's the difference? But now when it comes out so quickly that it must be within 10 years, many people are very worried and vulnerable and thinking, maybe I better make sure that there's a longer-term trust and maybe even a co-trustee or a separate trustee for that child, so not too much money comes out for that child to go out and buy that you know, fancy Mercedes or Lamborghini like you drive, Bob. I don't know. But but in any event, there's some considerations that people are now reviewing their plans, and I'll note in a few minutes some of longer term trusts and some changes too. But it's been major changes on some of these practical pieces.
When you talk with your clients about that, do they seem surprised, baffled, or all the above?
About the beneficiary designations,
yes.
And the payouts, yes, they're surprised. I mean, I I'm always worried that people said, "Oh, I signed a new will." It's like you have to sign a power of attorney. You've got to do your directive, but there are several pieces, and many people assume that contingent beneficiary is completed. And I, you know, whoever the people are using, or if they do it themselves, please go ahead and after you've left this program, go check your beneficiary designations to make sure your primary and contingent are there. So we are encouraging people to do that. And a trust for children or other beneficiaries, you know, obviously not everybody's married and have children, they should be checked as well to say what's the best way. We tend to push the ages for most people to become longer now. There's longer-term trusts most people are using, just so partially they don't get assets into their hands too quickly. And many people like long-term trusts, not just to avoid for tax issues, but in case their child's marriage may split up and they don't want the assets just dumping out to the child, and they may be concerned that the child may turn it over to a joint account. That's for a separate discussion, but I'm finding more and more clients are using longer-term trusts now and not just dumping out the assets to a child at 25 or 30, as the case may be.
Okay. We have about 8 minutes left, and we have one structured question. This could take some time. And the structured question is, what are the best tips each of you have in retirement planning? Dave's got a note here. Start early and start saving early in state of domicile. So fill in the blanks there, Dave.
Yeah, I've got one point for younger people and one point for older people. I used to teach an annual semester at the graduate level in retirement plans. In the first class, I would talk about when the Dutch acquired Manhattan Island from the Native Americans in 1626 for $24. And interestingly, if you apply the rule of 72 that says if you can earn 7.2% on your money, it will double in 10 years. Now, if you don't believe me, try this for yourself. Bring forward $24 in 1626 by doubling it every 10 years, and it will be worth today more than the land value of Manhattan, not wow. necessarily the buildings. It just shows the power of compounding. So I would encourage young people to begin retirement plan contributions early. For those people who are thinking of going to Florida or Texas or Nevada or any of the other three or four states that do not have a state income tax, do it correctly, especially if you're selling a business off in a stock sale or you're going to receive deferred compensation. You generally can avoid state tax by clearly establishing that this new state is going to be your permanent home and spending a greater portion of the year in that new state. Steve, you got one or two?
Yeah, I want to mention a couple. Again, I want to repeat to make sure that the beneficiaries are up to date. And I'm so surprised how many people think, no, I don't need to save. I'll take care of that later. The sooner you start, that $24 example of Dave's is the ultimate, you know, example of compounding. It's amazing. What we are also finding, and I want to expand about that one other comment that I'm finding in, we do a great deal of estate planning at Stein-Sperling. We have a large, very talented group. And many years ago, people would think, well, gee, you know, with all these retirement plans and the will stuff, maybe when the kids like are 25, 30, and 35, that they can have the assets. So many more people now, and it's not just the people that have millions, but people that have several hundred thousand, $1 million. And remember, this includes life insurance too, that if there's a large policy, for example, that went in for two children, and let's say it was $500,000 each, do you really want that 25-year-old to have all that money at right away? So many people are thinking about these long-term trusts. The technical name is generation skipping, but that confuses people. Just means it's there for their lives. It can avoid some estate taxes if handled properly. And with the increased exemptions around for estate taxes, that's not quite as important as the asset protection piece that if the child or other person's relationship breaks up, you want to make sure that that is still identified as non-marital money. And most parents are more and more concerned about that. They didn't think it was necessary, and then we talk about the examples, and they need to at least be aware of it or at least not make the distribution to a later age when maybe their marriage is more stabilized and all that. You know, we try to, some people use the expression that you love your kids unconditionally, but maybe the in-laws, you love them a little more conditionally. So it's, these are things that we encourage people to just at least think about, even if they choose to leave it at an outright age much sooner.
How much pushback do you get with that, that people are anxious about structuring something where somebody might not get what they think they're going to get?
So two answers to that, Bob. One is that I found over the years, and as much as Dave and I do a lot of tax planning, a lot of the shifts have become a little more practical. You know, who's going to be a trustee? What are the goals for a child? But one is the fact that, you know, they're thinking, well, maybe we should do a little more asset protection and maybe we need that. But one way to handle it is said, if somebody said, well, why should my child have to go to his or her uncle or relative or a bank, you know, until they're 65? One transition planning, and especially since many jurisdictions now have what's called the Uniform Trust Act, that there's a way to have, even if the child, let's say, become his or her own trustee or a co-trustee at, for example, 35 and sole trustee by 40. So they have the best of all worlds, that they no longer have to answer to somebody, but there's some standards such as distributions for support or maintenance, but they don't have to go to that uncle or friend or bank anymore, and they can take it over and maybe even invade for their own children as needed, and the parents are building a little bit of a legacy for the next generations too. It's kind of a nice way to be remembered too, to buy a car for a grandchild or somebody.
And me. We have 50 seconds left, guys. Final comments?
Estate planning is very important for everyone, irrespective of their wealth. We would encourage everyone to receive professional estate planning at the various stages of life, especially when they have transition in the family.
We are getting an enormous number of calls right now because everything that's going on with the environment and the virus. And I think people need to think, it's kind of made them start a discussion about how best to protect themselves, but not just death, but disability as well. They need to think about all those things too. So thank you, Bob, for involving us.
Thanks for being there to be involved. Let's do it again soon.
A pleasure always.
All right.
Look forward to it.
Ours too. Thank you. And thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back next week. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP and sponsored by WEPA. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. This show can also be heard on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search For Your Benefit. Thanks for listening.